Now it's time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist, Joey Bia's research grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Today in my studio, my great friend, organic gardener, Inspector Dave. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me again. Great to get out and be in the studio with you.
You know something? Well, it's a wintertime activity here because we got some snow going outside, and I know that you'd rather be outside, whether it's in your garden or in the field.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing like being outside and just connecting with nature and looking at the soil and looking at the plants, whether it's spring, summer, winter, or fall. Every season is different in the garden.
Well, you know something? That's what today's show is all about, is those winter garden activities. So how do I get involved with my organic garden wintertime?
Well, one of the first things is planning. This is the time of year where we're thinking about what we did last year and what we want to do this year in the garden. We're reading our journals, looking at our notes, seeing what worked really well, maybe what didn't work well, starting to work on our graphs, our spacing, getting our catalogs out, and just getting mentally prepared for the spring season where we really have to start working in the garden.
Well, you know something, and you and I many times will go to fly fishing shows and all this, and you get excited about being, you know, like, I guess that's part of your, like, hey, can't wait to get there. But there are things to do, and that's what today's show is about. There are things that you can be doing in your garden. Again, it depends on where you live in the country and the amount of snow. And again, it just snowed around here, so we've got a little bit of, you know, hey, some different things going on in the garden. So what should I be doing outside right now?
Well, we should be collecting, if we have not already done that, collecting organic products like leaves and twigs and any other dead weeds, anything that we can use for composting and building up our soil with organic elements. And we also want to think about pH in the soil, because this is a good time of year to get your lime down there so that it has time to work and do its chemical reactions with the soil so that we will have proper pH when planting time comes. So we have all winter for it to work its way in, the snow, the rains, the frost, the ground heaves make it all happen. And we should think about fallowing. That's where we have our garden area is not doing anything. It's resting. The soil is there. So it's preparing itself, getting rebalanced, and nutrients are working their way around. The worms may be still working there. And working on our compost, you know, thinking about our compost piles, keeping our beds shaped up, and even cover crops. You know, a lot of people miss cover crops. And cover crops are little seeds that we'll put into the soil after we're done growing our vegetables, and it helps to restore nitrogen. It'll bring nitrogen up from down in the subsoil, and it'll add organic tilt to the soil. And this can be annual rye, vetches, clovers, buckwheat. These are all things that people use for cover crops.
And I know that by adding those cover crops in, and we'll talk about it later on, but you're going to use less, again, we're organic guys, but less of a chemical, so to speak, because you're not trying to put any nitrogen back into the soil, or much less nitrogen by using that cover crop. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. Now, you mentioned about frost heaving, and I was just going to throw a little science in there because, hey, I'm the environmental science guy. And this is really what happens in frost heaving is water, when it freezes, it expands by 9% in volume. So what happens is, if you were to take water and watch it freeze, you're sitting there a long time, but as it freezes, you're going to see the volume grow. So it actually starts to push. Like if you were having water below your garden soil, it's going to push things up. That's why sometimes in the springtime, you might see a rock in your garden. Go, where does rock come from? And you're expecting your evil neighbor planted it inside, and that didn't happen. What happened is it was getting pushed up by frost heaving. So a number, as you spoke, a number of the nutrients, but if you're putting different leaves and compost into it, it's actually moving them around inside of your soil as well. Now, should I be looking out for stakes, supplies? Like, what am I doing? Hey, you can always use something extra for your garden. What am I doing?
Right. I'm always on the lookout for any types of stakes or supporting things, cages, poles that people put out there, maybe a tent that collapsed because they forgot to take it in when it snowed. So I'm always looking for stakes and poles that people have out on the curbside before the scavengers come and get them. Or also people may be cleaning a house out and maybe they were a gardener or they just have some types of poles. Maybe some soccer guys have some old poles from a net that they had. So it's a great way to just stock up on your poles. It's ongoing. Again, we're keeping that enthusiasm going all year long when we're gardening, and that includes collecting supplies.
It's amazing what people discard. And as you were saying that and describing it, I remember driving by one old-time Italian gardener when I was growing up, and I looked at his garden, and all of his stakes were hockey sticks. He must have found somebody who was playing ice hockey or the local arena. Sticks got broken, and those were his tomato stakes. That was pretty cool. Now, leaves. Why are they so good for your garden?
Because, first of all, they're free.
Free is a good thing.
Nothing better than free in the garden. And they do provide a lot of minerals to the soil that once they compost and break down, they really add a lot of nutrients back into the soil, and they help to break the soil up. It's really a different type of peat moss. Like a lot of people use peat moss in their garden to break it up, but that can be expensive if you have a larger garden. So leaves serve the same purpose, to bring those minerals in and to break up the soil.
Now, are some leaves better than other leaves for your garden?
Well, some leaves have a faster breakdown ratio. Whenever you're incorporating leaves into your garden, they should always be on the moist side because the moisture will help to break them down sooner. If you're able to shred them or chop them up somehow, the smaller they are, the quicker they'll break down. And leaves like oak leaves are the traditional leaves, but I try to use a variety of leaves in there. Maple leaves people steer away from because they're a very moist leaf and they take a long time to break down. But good dry leaves, I think a variety of leaves is always great because then you're getting a little bit of everything, deep-rooted trees and shallow-rooted trees.
Ah, so a little mixture of both. Now, talking about compost, hey, it's cold outside. We got snow outside here. Is it too cold to compost?
Well, the compost pile is going to cool off, obviously, when the weather's colder. Even if you have an accelerator bin or a tumbler or some other way to keep it going, it needs heat to operate. So it'll be kind of dormant in the winter time, and maybe the mice will be in there moving things around. So it'll be something happening in the pile. But you should be stockpiling items now, whether you're saving things from your garden, from the kitchen, scrapings and all that. Or if you're just collecting anything that you can put into your compost pile, and we talked about in another podcast, maybe sawdust from untreated wood, maybe some hair, you know, from your sink or wherever you find bundles of hair from, anything organic, it's just stockpile it maybe in a garbage can somewhere. And then when the time comes to get the compost pile up and going again, you have material ready to start that pile.
Well, question I have then is, if you're stockpiling, is there an aroma? This is inside your house. Like, how do we do this?
Oh, no, I would stockpile that outside somewhere. I'd have an outdoor garbage can, preferably near the compost pile, so it's out away from the house. So if you get a hot day, and maybe it could get a little stinky. But for the most time, it's going to be frozen, you know, cold outside. So you really won't get much odor from anything you're putting in there.
Ah, so I got a marketing thing. We could sell frozen compost. There you go. Hey, anything for a dollar. Just kidding. Now, you know that wintertime, every day you go to your mailbox, there are seed catalogs. Like, how am I getting so many of these catalogs?
Well, anytime you get on the list, you answer an email somewhere, or you buy one product, the names just get sold to the marketers, and it doesn't take long for you to become well-known as a gardener among the different marketing companies.
Well, again, it also gives you, and this is the winter time, you're just thinking about because you're looking from catalog. And you know, it's funny, there are catalogs that I don't purchase from, but I still look at what's inside of there. And again, as the environmental scientist, I eventually will contact that company and say, hey, look, please don't send me your catalog. But because they rent lists from each other, even though they stopped this year, in a year or two, you end up getting that catalog back again inside there. Now, what should I look for in a seed company?
Well, you should look for a company. Non-GMO is one of the main things you should look for. So they're not selling genetically modified seed. Looking for ones that have organic seed if possible. And untreated seed. Untreated means that there's no chemicals, any fungicides or mildicides or any other type of seed treatment that they may put. A Captan is big on corn sometimes. So a lot of companies think that they need to put this on there to keep your seed from rotting in the soil before it sprouts. But you want good, clean seed. There's other ways we can get around using any coated seeds or chemically treated seeds.
Well, with the coated seeds, many times you'll see them, they'll actually show up a different color because that coating is a pinkish color, bluish color. So you see that. And when you were mentioning about non-GMOs, and you know, when you hear the word genetically modified, that means we're changing the genetics. And again, I'm speaking about now as a purist, as an organic guy, we should not be changing anything in nature. So when I'm looking at a seed company, I want a non-GMO seed company. I know that you're the same way. And I also noticed that in many of the catalogs that I've been receiving, Inspector Dave, that the number of organic seeds over the last year has been growing quite a bit.
Yes, there's a market for this, and I believe the companies are realizing this, that people are looking for the healthier alternatives, that if they're doing an outdoor garden on their property, they want a chemical-free garden. That's why you do it, so you can have produce there that you know you grew, and you grew it clean and fresh and without any chemical assistance.
Now, are some of these seed companies related?
Yes, they are, and we'll get a lot of seed catalogs, like you said, because they're exchanging lists, but a lot of times they're exchanging lists within their own organization. A lot of the smaller seed companies, it's a tough business, hard to compete, and they end up people retiring or they get a buyout from larger companies. So you'll see that a lot of the actual seed companies, even though they have a different name in a catalog, it's a lot of the same addresses.
Well, you know something, and I know a little bit about this because with chiliplants.com, where we do the research with them. And as Janie was discussing with me, Janie's the owner of Cross Country Nursery, and Janie was describing that there's a lot of the seed growers, and they want to pass their business down to their children, and their children are not interested. Again, they've gone off to college, they've done whatever they're doing, and they're not interested in keeping these businesses alive. So the number of seed growers, I shouldn't even say in our country, because it is worldwide, a number of the seed growers is diminishing as time goes on. So these mergers, then, good or bad, I have to happen to perpetuate the seeds. With all of these seed companies, what about those big ag chemical companies that are out there?
Again, this is the merger thing that's happening. You know, the big chemicals, agricultural companies have a lot of money, and they're able to try and corner the market. They want to promote their side of the business, the chemical side, against the organic side. So they tend to buy up a lot of the seed companies and other smaller companies as investments and as a way to control the market. So you have to use their products. So if you want to be a purist and you really want to stay with organic seeds and non-chemically treated seeds and seeds that are bred to grow properly without chemical assistance, then you want to stay with the smaller companies. So you can do that by looking at the mailing addresses. And also there's websites you can do when you get your internet going, and you can research the different companies and you can see who they're owned by, and they'll rate the companies. A lot of the organic websites out there will rate the different seed companies, like buy from this one, avoid that one. And again, you're looking maybe for the small mom and pop operations or small family operations. Try to support them because they're doing the right thing to keep our seed supply safe for us.
And you know, as you're describing all of that, there are major companies out there and major farms of like 50,000 acres, 100,000 acres, and they are spraying chemical on all of their product. Because again, you don't have to be totally organic, but being close to organic, but you know this, being organic is actually easier and cheaper. And you were discussing something, you and I were just talking about ordering WOW for front lawns. And tell me something, they had a fact in there about the cost involved in organically growing your lawn. I know it's off the track, but you know, maybe I'm going to tell it. And versus if you're spraying chemical on your lawn.
Yes, they did a line-by-line comparison of the pricing from having a landscaper come in or even doing it yourself using chemical products versus organic products. And it was half the price. I mean, it's a no-brainer. You're spending half the money, And it's safer. Safer for your yard, safer for your kids, safer for your pets, safer for you, safer for the environment. Why wouldn't we all do this on our lawns? Why do we go out there four times a year with the chemicals that they try to sell us and just keep putting this stuff down layer after layer after layer and then blowing it around with the leaf blowers and spreading it around with the rain? It makes no sense to me. I can't understand why it's so hard for people to switch over to organic methods of lawn care. I've been doing it for over 30 years. It's simple. It's twice a year. I use my spreader. It's a granular formula that I use. It feeds and prevents weeds all at the same time using corn gluten, which is a cast-off product from corn production when they're processing corn. So it's a win-win all the way around. The only one, I guess, who maybe the delivery guys, when they come by and have to bring me 100 pounds or 200 pounds of fertilizer, like, wait, what's all this stuff? But, you know, it keeps them in business too.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. You are actually ordering for a number of people, so you're not, because so yeah. People don't think that you're putting that much down on one lawn. And then the other thing is that when you're doing this, and I know it's off topic a little bit, but you're actually creating a microclimate around your microenvironment around your home of organics for your children, your neighbor children, your neighbors, your pets, all that as well. So let's get back into the show here. So I'm going to throw you the next question, Inspector Dave. What are heirloom seeds?
Well, heirloom seeds is a small cottage industry now, unfortunately, that keeps the original type of seed or plants that were offered maybe 100 years ago or 200 years ago. And that's where, like, our plants originated from. And a lot of these heirloom seeds have a different look to the fruit, so maybe it's not as pretty. But they may have better taste, disease resistance may or may not be better, different root systems. And it's where we're going back to the basics, back to this is where everything came from. And then we just started playing with the seed and trying to make it bigger and better, so to speak.
You know, it's funny on that one, you were describing, you said sometimes they don't look well. Sometimes when you buy the heirloom tomatoes and you're getting all these different colors, and it actually brightens up your garden because you're seeing different, you know, I'm just using tomatoes for example, and I know that all the universities that do research, the research they're doing is they have their own library of heirloom seeds because they keep going back to those seeds to do their research with as well. Now, hybrids, what's the difference on those?
Well, hybrids, that's they're a little bit different type of seed. They take heirloom quality seeds and the plants and they cross-pollinate them. They look for the strongest plant and then they another strongest plant and they cross them to get either a plant that's healthier, maybe it grows bigger, maybe it grows smaller, and it may have a certain look or a color to it. And it only is good for like 1 year. So like hybrid seeds, you have to buy those. You can't really do them yourself unless you're really trained in that. So you can't save seeds from a hybrid plant that you grow because it won't grow true to the next year. It has to be done in a controlled environment by a seed producer who will just take the biggest and best or whatever qualities they're looking for in 2, 3, or 4 different plants and cross-pollinate them to get a plant that you like for your garden.
I know. And with those hybrids, some of them, and we know that they're out there, they produce some great, great fruits. And hey, what's the world's worst? With those seed catalogs, next year you're going out to purchase, repurchase, because seeds themselves are not expensive, is purchasing that same hybrid if you like that, like you're saying, if you like the certain taste or color or size, whatever it was. Now, are there any other concerns in seed selection?
Yes, you should not just look at the pretty pictures, because the pictures in the catalog are great because it may give you an idea. But remember, they're giving you the best looking fruit that they found growing from that seed, which may not necessarily be what you're going to see when you grow it in the yard. So there's some marketing going on there. In fact, just a little off topic there, some of the markets now, I hear there's a push to move towards ugly fruits. They call it, where we're used to going in like, it's got to be the perfect apple, the perfect tomato. It's got to be no blemishes, the perfect shape. And now they're saying the stuff that's ugly, it tastes just as good, it's just as nutritious, and it goes to waste. We waste so much produce in this country, it's criminal. It really is, because there's a lot of people that could be eating this in other parts of the world. Not that we can ship it everywhere, but we grow and use so many resources to grow, let's say, 1,000 pounds of tomato and only 500 pounds are what go to the market. because the other ones are ugly or blemished or misshapen or they don't fit in the box nice and all that. And people aren't going to buy them because it doesn't look nice. So we got to change our mindset. So I'm glad to see some of the different stores are starting to do that. And that's something you got to think about too when you're growing stuff. Just because it's ugly on your plant doesn't mean it's not going to taste good.
Hey, bottom line with me is I'm looking for something that tastes real good. So, that's a little bit of marketing and I like that. So anything else with that seed selection?
Yes, when you're looking through the catalogs, you're going to get catalogs from all over the country because that's how they market. So the main thing you want to find out, you should always know what growing region or what zone you're in. So if there's a rating in the catalog, like this particular variety is good for zone 1 or zone 5, you got to make sure it matches your zone so that it will grow to your expectations and on a description that's in the catalog. And also, a lot of times the growers will have best bets or most reliable from their experience. So they'll have varieties they've had that are time-tested for decades maybe, and then they'll have new varieties that they're just developing. And they'll rate them a lot of times, like this one's really easy to grow or this one's very disease-resistant. And you want to look for things that meet your personal choices. Like if you want something that's easy to grow, if you have kids, you want easy to grow items. You don't want them to be frustrated, you know, in their first couple of years in the garden. If you have trouble with disease because of the weather or the soil in your area, you want something with a little more disease resistance. And you're looking for just something that's robust. Corn. Like if you ever look in the average seed catalog at corn selection, it's like, how can they come up with 50 different descriptions of corn, but they do somehow. And it just like makes your mind go crazy. Like, well, which corn am I going to get? You know, so you have to look at what is maybe the most robust, what has the best germination qualities, and looking at what kind of exposure, how much sun does it need, you know, based on your garden location, that would be a match you'd want to do also.
And as you're telling that, I'm thinking of a story. My little niece, Gracie, a year ago, she had asked me because we were going pumpkin picking. And I said, yeah, there's lots of different varieties. And she looked at me like, no, there's just a pumpkin. And then I brought a seed catalog down with like 30 different varieties of pumpkins. And then we probably sat there for a half hour. We did stop on the corn with the good tomatoes. And she realized that there's just so many different varieties that are out there. Now, when you're going to order the seeds, now, do you order them wintertime, spring? For you, what is the best and how should we do it?
Well, I start doing my seed selection in January. It's a good cold weather project. Again, when you're cooped up in the house, you got cabin fever, you pull out the catalog, start thumbing through them, reading about the different offerings they have this year, new versus old. And I put my order together, but I don't always order it right away. I'll think about it a little bit and reread it a little bit more and think about spacing and what I want to do. So I try to really order early, though, in the season, maybe by February or March, because the seed selection will be the greatest at the producers because they may have a popular seed they run out of stock on. So you don't want to be disappointed, like after you sat there for an hour trying to figure out what kind of carrot to buy, and then you go to order it and it's not available, it's sold out. Now you're going to get to start over again. So that's important. And also you're looking for sales on the products because they may have special seasonal sales, you know, because they're trying to get cash flow going at their business too to cover their expenses. So you want to order early in the season too because they may give you a break, maybe 10% off or free shipping. And also you got to think about now once you get this at your house, what are you going to do with it? Do you have the proper storage facility for these seeds so they stay viable, you know, until planting time?
So how do you store? So here you are. Let's just say that seed company A just shipped you seeds. What do you do with them? How do you store them?
Well, I store mine in a glass jar in the refrigerator with desiccant packages in there. And a lot of the different growers and catalogs will offer storage packages that you can buy as a little option on there. You just look at, usually on the ordering page, and there are little packages of desiccant, which keeps the moisture level constant and the glass in the cool place. So you want to keep them in a cool, drier place to retain the viability.
Is that sort of like in your crisper, the one of the lower drawers, you just pop them in there?
Yeah, just in a cool place. Or if you have a cool basement, cool basement will work also.
All right, now, we're going to do some purchases. So let's be consumer shoppers right now. Are there any other ways to get good pricing on all of this?
Well, it's the usual internet shopping things that we try to do. Because I buy all my stuff pretty much on the internet. You know, I'll fill out the catalogs, you know, the worksheet just to go through it, but then I do it on email because it's just easier and you get better service, it seems. The companies like that. It saves them money too. So if you sign up for their email, they'll send you sale items. If you maybe they have a club that you can join. Most of the clubs are free, so you just join like a frequent buyers club, and that's a way to get discounting. And I'm trying this now where I've put my order in and put it into my cart on the website and then left it there. And then a lot of times you'll get an email from them. Oh, you left your cart's open. You left something in there. And maybe they'll try for the first couple times to just to get you to get in the cart again. But then if they see you're not doing anything, they may throw you a little bonus of some type to because they know that you want this stuff. So they want to encourage you somehow. So that's another way that I try also.
Now, you know, it's funny as you're describing that one, this happened to me recently. I forgot that I, you know, put something in a shopping cart somewhere else. And maybe, I don't know, a week ago, they said, by the way, if you purchase this, we'll give you 10%. I go, wow. So I ended up getting 10% off on a product that I forgot that I actually wanted to buy. Now, I know that sometimes you can bulk together with a fellow gardener or something like that. And just to share a quick story, because you and I on our different properties, we use seed bells that we feed the birds with, and we partner together on that. You have a larger property, more seed bells going, but we were able to split that, find a good price, and purchase that. So I know that that works well, I guess you'd say that. So for you personally, what are you doing this year for your seed selection?
Well, again, I have a couple neighbors and friends that garden, so I'm making sure I'm looking at what I'm buying. So I'm buying packages like, and even some of the packages that are smaller that you buy for gardens might have 40 seeds or 50 seeds or 100 seeds. And if you have a small garden, it's probably 5 or 6 or 7 times the amount of seed that you need, you know, even if you have to replant because of a sprout failure or whatever. So I make sure that I think about, okay, who needs some corn seed, who needs some squash seed, and I'll let them know, look, I'm ordering this squash. If you want some, I'll give you a handful. And it's a good way. So I'm doing that even more so this year as my network builds in a neighborhood, trying to get other people. And it's actually kind of a selfish thing too with the corn, because I'm growing a very specialized corn this year, which needs isolation so it doesn't crossbreed with other pollen from other corn types. So I'm trying to get the one fellow who grows corn near me to use the same corn so that I can get pure hybrid corn, you know, from this. It's a different type of corn I'm trying this year. I also am buying from 3 different companies this year. One is in Maine, one's in Indiana, and one's in Oregon. And I'm just going through the catalogs again, looking at the different varieties. And it's amazing how some varieties are just in every catalog. And then other varieties are only maybe it's an exclusive to that particular supplier. And it might have some really good attributes that you want. I'm always in the outlook for a bush or compact type squash and cucumbers and all that, because I don't have a lot of space. So I want smaller plants that still produce well. And then looking just for some of the old-time stuff that I've used for years, which I just love, and I just stay with those. And there's always that experimentation, 1 or 2 new choices that are coming out that have a good rating. And again, I'm doing the 3 parts of the country this year. It's a little probably excessive from what I normally do, but I'm, I guess, having a competition sort of between the companies too to see who's doing the best.
And you're describing, you're changing the corn. And if I was going to say the one thing that you know that, and I know you love corn, but the one thing that tastes absolutely spectacular right out of your garden is that corn. So I'm putting a lot of pressure on you right now to make sure that that new corn is the perfect corn. And you spoke about spacing and size. Well, guess what? If you're an organic gardener, your yield, again, you know this, how many fruits and vegetables do you give away to family and friends, neighbors? And the answer is it's a tremendous amount. So you can have a great yield in a small space. Now, do you start seeds indoors? And can you start seeds indoors? And I have a little bit to add to that one.
Yes, indoor seed planting or starting is very important, especially for plants such as like peppers or tomatoes that have a longer growing season. So you want to start those earlier. And that can be a little scientific there. I'll let you cover that more. But the main thing you're looking at is the calendar. Like, when are you going to plant it outside and then counting backwards through the calendar so you know when to exactly start it within the house, so that by the time growing season comes and a frost-free date, you can get it out there and you have a good, healthy plant. But you can go into some of the mechanics of it all because you're really good at that.
Well, you know, something, having the chili pepper research and knowing that, for example, in the Northeast, St. Patrick's Day was March 17th, is the official grow date, because now you know that you could put tomatoes and peppers in seed. And at that point, from that sow date, it is perfect in late May to be able to put your plants outside. So you actually have to look inside of your region of the country and what is the official sowing date. Sowing date means, when am I actually planting those seeds? And one of my first podcasts for Joey B. Outdoors was on seed starting. So you can go back. Don't leave our show right now. It's very important. Listen to this. But later on, you can go back and listen to that show. And I'm also, this spring, I'm also going to do a new show on seed cuttings. And I do a lot of experimentation and research with cuttings as well. So we've got an upcoming show on that. Now, question for you is, what about herbs and sprouts like alfalfas indoors?
Those can be fun to grow too. Very easy to do. People who like to have fresh sprouts during the winter, if you have a sunny windowsill or a little greenhouse window, it's a great way to buy some seed and just get the sprouts going for yourself so they're at your fingertips and ready to go. Relatively easy to do. Generally, you just use water or a very, very light soil medium of some type to grow them in.
And you know, as you're describing that, because I actually, the smaller pequin chili peppers that I grow for my own personal use, people don't realize that, because people will just pull plants out at the end of the season and discard them or compost them, whatever they're doing. And I take my plants that are in pots inside. Yesterday, now think about this. There is snow outside. Yesterday, I got my first flower on a plant indoors. And it is January. So what I'm going to do right now, and I explained this to you yesterday, I'm actually going to take that flower off because I don't want my plant to go into production right now. I want it to regenerate some of the energy. So when it really is time to get flowing, so I will be pulling that one off there. And if you grow things, as you're saying, about close to the home, your home has a lot of warmth. And some of my sage plants, I grow right next to the house. And in the wintertime, I could move the snow away and go out there and pick sage as well. So in your garden, what else is happening outside?
Well, one of the things when we were talking before about getting the seed there, we didn't talk too much about planning, like sketching and the quadrants of the garden. We should probably just insert this here to make sure that we have charts. Like, I keep my charts from year to year in addition to my journal, like how I planted things. And that's fun to sketch out your garden, whether you do it manually with a ruler like me, or you have graph paper, or you use computer-generated type graphing, and just laying out how you're going to put your plants, how you're going to space them, get some crop rotation going if you can so you don't plant the same thing in the same area. Think about trellising and bean poles and height and shading and all that. So that's another important thing we should be doing there on that. Another thing we should be doing is, when we're doing this, please be near a window. You know, make sure you're looking out into your yard, into your garden. There's a lot of things happening out there. Like, nature doesn't go to sleep in the winter. Maybe certain people hibernate a little bit, but the birds are still out, the foxes are out, the hawks are out. There's things going out there. There's activity out there, and it's very fun to see. You might catch a fox in your yard playing with a mouse, maybe seeing a hawk come in and grabbing a bird on the fly. You'll see squirrels out there running around doing things, and birds on you, if you feed, having birds on your feeders and in your bird bath, maybe taking a bath on a warm day, getting a drink. So those are all like fun nature things, you know, that are going on out there.
Well, I know that in your backyard, your property, that you have to do something special to your bird bath. Otherwise they'd be ice skating, correct?
That's correct. And I have my brand new bird heater this year. My other one, 15 years old, finally bit the dust. So I got myself a new little heater element that goes in there, and it just keeps the water tepid so it doesn't freeze. It goes down to like zero. It'll still be liquid out there so they can get a little bit of drink out of it, you know, and then on certain days they may take a bath too.
So it's like a bird jacuzzi is what you got out, out there.
Yeah, I mean, we got everything for the birds, you know, food, drink, bathing.
I was going to say, you have birdhouses out there too. So when it's time to nest, you got all that. So basically you have like a bird condominium complex on your property. Right. Now, to me, it's like you got these fresh-cut Christmas trees. Can't speak. I'm so excited about it. And what do you do with them?
Well, you want to recycle them somehow. Once it's served a purpose and beautified your house and you got your little trip out into the woods or to the farm to harvest them, which I think you spoke about recently.
Yes.
What do we do with it now? The needles are starting to fall. We want to get it outside. So there's a few things we can do. Some people put it out in the yard. They plant it a little bit and make a suet hanger out of it for the birds, you know, or maybe a little nesting site. Some people put them on the curb in the town. We'll have a recycling program where they'll turn it into chips and use it for mulch. And then some of the coastal cities and towns will ship the trees down to the shore, and they do them for dune replenishment. They use them to help bulk up the dunes and holds the sand in place. So you see quite a bit of that going on. One time, a number of years ago, before I had the front of my house landscaped, it was very bare in the winter. So I went around the neighborhood and just dragged home like three or four cut trees and stuck them in the ground. And people goes, wow, how'd you like grow those so fast? And you know, they're not going to take root, you know. And people, I said, I know that. It was just, I did it for decoration. They stay green because they're outside in the moisture. And I just let them all stay there for the winter to decorate. And then come spring, we mulched them up and sent them on their way.
And one other thing with Christmas trees, and I know people out in the countryside, they will just actually drag them to back parts of their property, and it becomes brush that many times you might get a cottontail rabbit or something that will actually make their burrow below that because there's some protection that's added. Now, you were talking about your garden journal. Do you always read it, and do you always follow your comments and observations?
I try to. What I've been doing now with my journal is putting exclamation points or highlighting stuff, yelling at myself in the journal, like, listen, these notes are here for a reason, because it's very hard in the excitement of planting seeds and plants that are so tiny, you know, trying to get that spacing right and not just going like totally crazy and ordering too many plants, you know, for the space that you have. And that's something you have to think about when you're ordering from your seed catalogs. It's very easy, and it's a great thing. Excitement and seeds are relatively inexpensive, but don't order like 30 packages of seeds for your garden. You're not going to be able to plant all those seeds. You're not going to have enough space. You're going to have crowding. And so instead of having all this wonderful stuff, you're going to have less produce because you're overcrowded or things competed with each other too much and stole moisture and nutrients out of the soil. So, you know, calm down, you know, use your spacing properly. Make sure you know, if you're an experienced gardener, you know, you have an idea what's going on, listen to yourself. But if you're a new gardener, less can be more. And when it comes to seeds,
and I think from your describing that is, if you're that rookie gardener out there, going to find an experienced guy like you and asking some questions, because less is definitely more. And with my chili pepper research, I have all of my plant research logs. And as you're talking about exclamation points, I always just write key, and then I put the K-E-Y, and the next year's date. So I'm saying for next year, make sure you go back and read this, because this is part of the research that you need to know that's key for the upcoming year. So that works. Now, we've been rambling, and I shouldn't say rambling because we're having a great conversation here. Do you have any closing comments, or maybe like this coaching point for the people that are out there ready to rock and roll winter gardening?
Keep that enthusiasm going, and you want to go through as many catalogs, talk to people, do some research, read your books. You should have some number of organic books with different practices. Even the seed catalogs will have little blurbs on how to grow a cucumber, how to grow a bean, how to grow certain things. Like, this is the soil temperature you need. This is the pH. This is the moisture. This is the sun exposure. So you really become a knowledgeable gardener in what you're going to grow out there.
So what you're saying is, it's, instead of get out and enjoy, and there's some things we can get out and enjoy this time of the year, is enjoy gardening 365 days a year.
Absolutely. And I remember one other thing I used to do in March to help my enthusiasm going was Dr. Seuss Day they used to have in the grammar schools. Well, they still have it. And people would go in, whether they're students, former students from the grammar school, or adults, parents, other teachers, and we would read Dr. Seuss books as a way to recognize his birthday and his commitment to childhood learning with the sheer volume of books that he put out there. And I used to, one of the books I used to grow was Oh Say Can You Seed? And it was a book all about seeds. and the different scientific parts of it. Not as much fun as Green Eggs and Ham, but it was still a good educational book. And then I would give each kid a little packet of seeds, bean seeds or other sprouty seeds, things easy to grow. And so sometimes they started them in the classroom as a little project, or they took them home and grew them at home. So it was a way to try and get a few of them interested in gardening.
Well, there you go, Inspector Dave. Always trying to pass it on to the next generation. So I just wanted to thank you for getting into the studio today and sharing all your knowledge.
Okay, and thanks for having me and really getting this message out to everyone.
So until next time, enjoy life's adventures. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.